Greetings and salutations from the Agile Revolution, Craig, Tony and Renee today. Craig.
Howdy.
Renee.
Howdy.
And Tony here today. So we've got to give you a little bit of Agile today. We're going to start with a little bit of Agile wrap-up. Renee, what have you got for us?
Well, I guess, you know, of interesting blogs in the last couple of weeks, there's probably two that have caught my eye. One of which was around a social neuroscience paper. It was called Squeeze Me, But Don't Tease Me, The Human and Mechanical Truth, Touch Enhance Visual Attention and Emotional Discrimination. So it was done.
Well, did you just see the title and went, that looks interesting?
What?
Yes.
Hey, what?
Squeeze Me. Oh, click.
Click. It was done by the University of Singapore. It had like a bajillion authors associated with it, but really what it was talking about at its essence was a physical touch, any element, so even like a second touch, would greater enhance the empathy and support that person would give to the person who was the toucher. So in essence, really what this means is that, you know, the slightest form of touch will help build that relationship between those two individuals, or if you had a wider audience of touching going on, then it would be greatly enhanced in the group in itself. Now, where I find this really interesting in this
It was the right podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I find this interesting in relationship to Agile in itself is that, you know, obviously touching is not encouraged at a professional layer in the workplace.
Cue the Samantha Fox music.
Yes. Due to harassment laws more than anything else. But they found that even a mechanical touch also increased the empathy to the person that was speaking at that particular time. So it's actually a physiological neural reaction that is occurring. So if we take it in its relationship with Agile, potentially what you're saying is, you know how we have these stand-ups, we all talk about what we did yesterday and what we plan on doing tomorrow and so forth. Well, the heart of the stand-up has come from the concept of Scrum, and the heart of a Scrum really was a literal Scrum. So what happens if we do a literal Scrum in stand-ups? Would we improve our empathy and our support for each other?
Interesting concept.
It would be very interesting.
I don't think I'd ever see people hold hands. I don't know whether, you know, is there something in that in the whole pair programming as well?
I could see it. Peace, love and agile.
So the guys who wrote this, who I bought from the University of Singapore,
mm-hmm.
they're just a bunch of neuroscientists, right?
Correct.
So how did you make the correlation here to something that we should be thinking about? Is it just that neuroscience?
Just that neuroscience,
yeah. Or has somebody else had a crack at it?
No, there's no other cracking going on.
Okay, just your cracking.
Just your cracking.
Just my cracking.
Oh. You saw a title called Squeeze Me But Don't Tease Me, and I'm in for that.
I'm all in for the touchy-feely stuff.
What are you actually searching to find that, by the way? Really?
It came through on one of the Agile Twitters. It was nothing else other than the link to the post.
I think we should assign ourselves to that.
Yeah. So I'm going to add squeeze and tease into my agile search now and see what comes up.
The other interesting blog that I saw recently was one called Eat Your Peas. So I'm obviously up for the titles here on the interesting blogs.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
A recipe for culture change.
Ooh.
And it was an article that was going through Jamie. What's his name? The cook. English dude.
Oh, with a lisp. He has got a lisp.
The young guy.
Yeah.
You're telling the story.
I know the one you mean. I can't remember his name.
I'll get it eventually. Yeah, anyway. Probably by the time I finish the podcast.
That Jamie dude that does that.
Anyway, do you know how he went into a number of different towns in different countries and tried to change their eating patterns? Mm. In essence, he was trying to do a cultural change, and he didn't really understand that. The blog went through the different elements of where he failed and where he succeeded and talked about why he failed and why he succeeded. And what I felt was really quite appropriate was it really, to me, related to agile cultural change and how you do transitional change with agile.
Ooh, Jamie Oliver.
Jamie Oliver. Yay! You just tried to search for it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
At its essence, it broke down his change process into six key steps, the first of which is listening to understand the existing culture. So there was talking about a failure point there whereby he immediately set a number of people on the wrong side because he just went in and said, blah, 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 do this, do this, do this. He didn't actually listen to what it was like for them and the way in which they worked, the way in which they ate. And consequently, he learned out of that that really the first thing you need to do as part of change is just sit and listen.
Yeah, and if you watch any of his shows, like the one where he goes to the US and tries to change the school cafeteria system, you know, I think that's what he really learned. I mean, you can go around, you know, flapping your gums about stuff, but in the end, I think he had to actually give up until they came back and you know, a bunch of other people in the community said, actually, this is a really good idea, and they're the ones who actually won the battle, and then he's been helping with it. Which is really that whole tribes concept, if you go back to Seth Godin's type idea, where you know, you can make a difference, but you really need a tribe to follow you.
Step two in the plan was have a plan.
Really?
Yep. So always have some sort of plan, and it will most likely inform have some element of education inside of it.
Yeah, I'll go for that.
Step three was lead with passion.
Or your chin, whichever one comes first.
Okay. Step four.
It usually goes hand in hand if you ask me.
If the plan or the education fails, don't give up, try a new path, lead with perseverance. So lead with passion, lead with perseverance.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess you can kind of see the interesting connotation where projects go wrong, because you know, I suspect that I know a lot of the project managers I've worked for over the years don't lead with passion, right? They lead with
process.
Yeah, or even just,
yeah.
I'm here to get my dollar at the end of the day.
Check in, check out.
Check in, check out.
And I think back to the projects that either I've been on that are successful or the ones that you watch that are successful, and that's a really good point.
Yep.
They exercise that control mechanism.
Hmm.
Step five, identify change opponents and focus heavily on them. So trying to win them over.
So know your enemy.
Yep. And number six was identify and nurture champions, which they called pride builders.
Tony, are you a pride builder?
I'm a pride.
Again, I think that goes back to that really close alignment with tribes. Identify the authority figures.
Mm-hmm.
Identify culture carriers. So these are people who are not authoritative, but are respected and listened to inside of the community.
Mm-hmm.
Respect your elders.
And that was about it. So I found that a really interesting post. Those were the two for me in the last couple of weeks. Awesome. Have you guys read anything interesting in the last couple of weeks?
So honestly, to say, been a little bit quiet on the front I've seen. Like in particularly Agile, if you look at both the papers you pulled out there, they're not purely in the Agile space. So mm-hmm. There's lots of things happening around. I did a bit of a scout, and honestly, they haven't seen too much of too much of interest.
So the one I pulled out was a nice little blog. Was called Influence Not Control, the New Project Manager Role, by a blog, Cosmo Think. And it's a fairly long post, but it's really about the change in project managers. It's funny, it's sort of a segue into what we were talking about before. And to summarise it, it is a really long post, so what I've done is just sort of summarise it. And what he goes on to say is traditional project management methods are failing due to the complexity of the systems in which projects find themselves. Well, duh.
Yep.
Nothing new there.
Complex systems, yep.
Yep. To be successful, project managers should start to adapt to complex systems, moving from the controlling to influencing. Which, you know, that's a big change for project managers because they do work in that control space. And like Craig said before, they don't normally come in with that type of influencing mode. And then the last point really wrapped up in it, this is difficult, but necessary change and expansion of the project manager role. And what he goes on to say is, you know, basically, if they don't do this, then he can see the project manager role disappearing completely.
Food for thought. I don't know whether that would happen. I mean, that was the very early proponent of Agile back 7-8 years ago. There's no role for a PM. In fact, it's still proponed by Scrum itself, saying there's no role for a PM.
Yeah, and I was going to say, is that written by the Scrum community?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I don't think he is Scrum community.
So he's not talking about servant leadership?
No, not at all. Yeah, it's basically steeping it in things like the new PM worlds and he's aligning it back to Sessionist's model, which introduces thinking about a different way of project management. So project managers external to the system. Well, there's a new one. Project managers seeking to implement controls on the system, a sense there's linear logical progression to events, a sense that objects in the system can be controlled through various methods, and a belief there's usually one cause, therefore one effect. Control the cause, you control the effect. So that's your atypical project manager now.
Mm.
And he's saying that they need to move away from that, and the world that they need to move into is the project managers inside the system. Project manager influences the system rather than controls the system. Since they're evolutionary, not linear, since the objects in the system have their own flow and organise themselves, and a belief that there's multiple causes and therefore multiple effects, and therefore you cannot control most of it.
Yeah, what's it really telling us though?
Not a lot.
Yeah,
good. I mean, at its heart, Agile is a framework around continuous improvement, continuous reflection and so forth, and it's been found that continuous reflection and refinement of the way that you work is the only way to deal with complex systems.
Sure, but isn't there a higher problem here that I take exactly what the author was saying there in relation to the existing project manager role, but the new project manager role, as we all know, there's still a role for somebody to make sure that all the resources for a team are available, that the team is being led, the team is being fed, that you know there's money coming into the system, there's a place to work, to all those kind of things that the project manager does, where it looks after all those. Tangible things outside the work, and that article doesn't seem to cover that for me. And that's where I think the gap was in the Scrum product owner role for me as well.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the Scrum product owner role has got a lot of merits. That you have somebody who is there who has a belief in the system, but I never quite bought the concept that it replaced the project manager per se.
Excellent.
I thought it was thought invoking for me.
I did find my article, the one I did see this week, so I was kind of lying. But it was about test automation. Just a lot of work around tests and this author here was who I can't seem to find his name at the moment, but it's from it's called The 3 R's of Automation, and he said that an automated test must be rapid, reliable, and relevant. For rapid, that we want quick tests and we want we want quick turnaround. We want tests that are reliable, obviously, because an automated test that's not running, it's no good if it's showing a false positive, and no point if you're continually fixing the build. And it must be relevant, right? So every test must pay their way. So but that's quite an interesting little article just to kind of remember the 3 R's. It's a nice little.
Do you think there are any extra R's missing in that list?
I thought it was pretty good, and there was some chatter on another post I was looking at where some people were talking about some other ones like is it right, for example, as a 4 R. But to me, they kind of hit the relevance. So
mm-hmm.
I think those 3 R's were reasonably good to me. But if I thought long and hard on that part about it, I'd probably find some other R's. But I think he was trying to get the 3 R's concept, trying to get it down to 3. So we could argue all day about whether there's another one or not.
We could. Should we?
No.
Shall we move on? So I guess the thought of the day, is that where we're going next?
Yep.
So the thought of the day, I don't program software anymore, I program people. You want to give us your thoughts on
that? That's your quote.
I know it's my quote. That's why I'm not going to comment on it. So I thought I'd...
Do you know where it comes from?
I have to admit, I can't remember who it was that I actually stole that from, but it's not mine. It is definitely not my quote. However, I loved it.
Well, I mean, we've all come from a software development background, and we've all moved...
Well, not all of us.
Really?
I say that in general. Maybe all of us have, but...
No,
not
all three of us
uh-huh.
have all come from a software development background, and now we're programming people instead.
There's a lot of differences. There's a lot of the same, I think.
Yeah, my only problem with that quote is that ultimately we still program software, and... We don't program our people to use the software. We actually work with them to do it. So I think the program analogy, doesn't quite gel with me because it almost says we're robots and our users are robots and that's essentially what we're trying to go against. So I think as a coach's perspective, it's from the coaching perspective. Yeah, we don't program software anymore. We program people because we're helping them make those links. But if we're talking about in general. I think one of the big things that we've seen in the last, you know, 5-10 years is the growth of the cloud and the growth of the internet and you know, everyone being connected and on Facebook and Twitter and whatever.
Facebook.
That everybody's so close together now that all the old paradigms don't actually, you know, really exist anymore, because you can't pull all over a user's eyes anymore and go, you can't drag something from one side of the screen to the other, because they know they can do it. So many of these systems, and you know, you look at phones, right? People are used to, you know, now having apps and downloading and uploading, and you know, and if you look at the growth in smartphones, so you know, the fact that people aren't used to change in applications, right?
What I think I like about this, not necessarily the programming software anymore, because certainly I don't do that and haven't for a while now, but programming.
Yeah, the world's a better place now.
Programming people. Do you think, in essence, that you can change people?
I think you can influence change. You can't change people per se. You can influence the way that they see things, the way they do things, by introducing new concepts, new thoughts to them, and that's partially our role.
So that's probably the clear differentiator, because you can't influence a software development program. You can change it.
Mm.
So we can only influence the programming of people. And what neuroscience tells us is that you can, in fact, change your default behavior. Just requires a heck of a lot of work.
What, by squeezing it or hugging it or something?
Yes, by squeezing and hugging.
I referred to the beginning of the show.
In essence, nothing is set in stone. You can always create new pathways. Those new pathways, you can start generating them today. But in order for that pathway to become your default behaviour, which is what we're ultimately after when you're coaching, it takes considerable time.
Agreed. But people still have to have the want to open up those new pathways.
Yes.
If someone is closed, then, you know.
And that's change management 101. People actually have to want to change, and they have to see the value in changing.
And that's why we can't program people.
Yeah.
Although I would counter with, sometimes people don't know they want to change.
Yeah, they don't know any better.
Yeah. So sometimes it's about opening up those pathways and opening up those doors, so they get the opportunity to go, wow, I didn't see the value in that.
Hmm. Interesting thought.
And that's the whole idea of the thought of the day.
And have you used that thought anywhere, Tony,
this week? Yeah, I must say, I've influenced a number of people such as yourself, Craig. No, seriously. I try to do that every day anyway. I think in coaching, I do employ that method of giving them the tools and giving them the concepts and not trying to jam it down their throat. You have to step back. Part of our role, and this is me preaching again, but part of our role is being that person that does step back. There's that whole thing around that theme that I keep saying about diamonds and coal, you know? You've got to give them the ingredients to become the coal. You've got to know how much pressure to put on there so that in the long term it becomes a diamond. But if you push too much pressure, they're just going to explode. And that's part of our role, is knowing exactly where to put the pressure and give them the ingredients.
Very good.
Moving on,
right along. Somebody wanted to get chaotic, chaos and chaotism into the feature time. Renee, what have you got for us today?
I think this is probably one of my pet peeves.
Here we go.
Are you listening? That great big crash, I'm sorry if I soldered your ears, is the soapbox. Hop on up.
Yay! Up here on the soapbox.
We still can't see your name sounding too close.
One of my pet peeves is that when you go into a team and you're going there to help them, and either you're there or you hear about a team that's having some trouble, they're struggling in some way, and you ask questions or you walk around, you have a look at their wall, and really what inevitably you come to the conclusion of is that not following Agile at all, they're following this thing called chaos or chaotism. So chaotism is the slightly ordered version of chaos. So there's a couple of rules in there, but it's still at its heart a very chaotic process. My pet peeve is these people that are calling what they're doing Agile, when in reality it's not.
Hmm. So you're suggesting that some folks see that when they're doing Agile it must be chaos, or they only go as far by putting, you know, taking certain practices that it just results in chaos?
The latter, yes. So they're doing a number of practices, they think they're agile, but in reality they're failing at one or more practices, they're not adopting several of their practices, and really what they're doing is just an ordered form of chaos.
Yeah, so one of the things I often tell people is that, especially when I train very basic agile, is that there was a myth when we first started talking about agile, way back when, that agile was chaos, and that was a myth that we tried to debunk. And I've actually gone against actually saying that, because to me, if you're just starting down your agile journey, you have to go through chaos. Any change, right? You only make change if there's some sort of uneasiness, some sort of chaos. Otherwise, you're just, doing the same thing you were before.
Point in time is chaos an embedded process rather than agile?
Well, that's the difference, right? You have to feel some pain to make some change. So these people that you kind of go, how's your agile transition? They go, awesome, right? Yeah, you're lying, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have to go through, if you're really changing from an embedded process, it's going to feel bad. Right, but through that feeling bad makes it then feel a lot better by the time you get to the other end. But the teams like these, and I think these are your chaotic teams, are the ones that go, righto, we've been told to change, or we know we have to change because our competitors are doing it. Right, we go through some chaos. You get halfway through, then they go, this doesn't feel good, but we'll just stay here anyway because it's all too hard. And they're in this
place interim between state.
Yeah, interim stage where it's too hard to go back, and they don't want to take any more pain to move forward.
Yeah, there's a big difference between the disruptive thought and actually taking that disruptive thought to the next level, and exactly what Craig said, they're there because they've been told to go there, and then they end up in this position where they just go, well, we're going to stick with it because we've got to ride it to the end.
This disruptive thought was brought to you by disruptivethought.com.
That just happened to be part of that, I guess. They're bagging me because my website is disruptivethought.com, but I didn't mean it that way.
Less advertising!
Well, that was accidental. But it is. It's that whole disruption thing.
I guess I'm not really talking about transitioning to agile. I'm talking about teams that actually think they're doing agile, and really they're not, and they're giving agile a bad name.
Okay. So my comment with that is there are teams that think they're doing waterfall?
Yes.
And they're giving waterfall a
In
bad
fact,
name.
I would say a majority of the waterfall failures really are these teams that have gone into chaos. I would totally agree that waterfall gets a bad rap because of chaos as well.
So Craig, I know you've said this to teams before, because I've witnessed, and I've said the similar thing. Waterfall done badly, agile done badly, it doesn't matter. If you're not doing the right, you don't have the values, you don't have the principles and the practices in place, then it's not going to work. It doesn't matter what framework, what methodology you're using.
Well, to me, it's the whole point, and it comes back to kind of what I was talking about before, is that we need to move through this analogy of working in a factory, which is what we were 10, 15 years ago, right? Is that, the old leadership model said that, you come to work, you sit at your station, you do your thing, you punch in, you punch out, and you have no ability to make any change. Whereas, the organizations of the future, the ones that can actually adopt agile and make it work, are the ones where you come to work and it's your organization. Right, it doesn't matter whether you work for Acme Incorporated, right? Acme Incorporated is your organization, or at least part of Acme organization is yours. So you're coming and actually putting your whole into the work that you're doing. And if you think about it, that's what agile allows you to do, right? We spend, 40, 50 hours a week at work, which is far more than we spend at home, living our lives. Right, it's probably as much as we spend sleeping. So, we spend an awful lot of time in our workplaces, yet, right, it's a real drudge. So these chaotic teams are the ones that are kind of going, well, we can only do this, right? We're not allowed to do anything else, right? And they stop there, and that's where I think where the chaotism comes in, because they're still following this process without any want to change anything. And a lot of people still in organizations, still feel like that factory mentality. That factory mentality doesn't fit very well with an agile.
And I think with those teams, I've walked into those broken teams before where supposedly agile is not working. One of the key themes, which is a bit of a cliche, is that everything is a problem. And when you sit down and work through with them, the first thing you try to change in their mindset is a problem is only an opportunity.
Yeah.
To make that change. And you say, the first thing you ask them is why. That's our job, isn't it? That's the thing that we bring into the mix sometimes, is to be able to ask that why. Because they often won't ask that themselves. As you said, they're stuck in that mind model of, it's a problem, we're just going to deal with it, we're going to Forrest Gump it, stupid is, stupid does, so we're going to keep doing it because we always did it.
So how do we get out of chaotism then?
With agile, of course. So in a truly...
Oh, I hear a silver bullet whistling halfway is.
By no means is a silver bullet.
Less advertising, please.
But, you know, taking it down a path of saying, define the things that aren't working as far as the process steps. To look at the practices that aren't being followed or the practices that aren't working for the team. Make it a list, prioritize it, estimate it, and then fix them one by one. So, you know, make your own little agile process or project around the process improvement of the team that you're working with.
There's silence. We bow to your wisdom.
There's nodding.
There's nodding.
Do you need a hand down from that test box?
No, I'm fine now, thank you. Oh, what I do want to note is, have you ever seen Scott Ambler's statistics at all?
Yes. I love Scott Ambler.
So he's got a really great survey result on, and you can have a look at it at www.ambisoft.com/surveys. And one of his surveys is about the different methodologies and their success/failure rates. And interestingly enough, if you choose chaos, you have a better chance of success than waterfall.
Yes, I've seen that before. But if you think about it, the reason that it is more successful is that you're kind of running around just getting stuff done.
Yeah.
Right. The reason that the waterfall in those surveys doesn't show up as successful is that people are still planning about how they might be successful. Chaos and agile are all about actually doing something. So whilst chaos doesn't deliver us value, chaos still delivers stuff. It's just not the right stuff. It's actually just lots of wasted effort.
I think it'd be an interesting stat, though, to see how many agile projects fail.
I think it would be more interesting is where they fail.
Yeah, yeah. So there's my question. Yeah.
If you look at the Standish report, which is the one that's sort of looked at that, the numbers for failed projects, IT projects worldwide, still haven't dropped significantly.
Yes.
However, the drop that they're seeing is the fact that more projects come across the line. We still haven't got very good at estimating them and still haven't got very good at delivering things still, right? Which is a bit of a shame because that was really the whole promise of it. What we do have, however, is happier customers, and that's what they are seeing.
Yes.
So we're getting the right value?
Yeah, I think that's the point being is that what we are delivering is valuable or more valuable than what we were delivering. And the second thing for me, the interesting numbers I'd like to see is where we fail exactly. Because if we fail early, and people have a hard time with that success equals failure, or failure equals success, but it is successful if we stop it where it shouldn't go forward.
You know what I also think is interesting is that where the team engagement is and how that's changed over the years. Are people feeling more engaged by doing agile or not?
One would hope so.
Yes. Yes. That's what keeps us employed.
Well, I have to say, so here's a quick straw poll of the three. It was three agile coaches who work in different environments and traverse the areas. When you see an agile team that's ticking over and working well together, are they engaged? What's the mood of the group, Craig?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just down with the team stand up this morning and I was asked to kind of to stand in the back and observe and see what was going on and made myself three mental notes and by the end of it the Scrum Master had made those three changes and I spent a lot of time with that particular Scrum Master and to me that was validation and success. Right?
Yeah.
When the team are looking at that and they're calling out the issues and they're saying what about this and what about that and we need to do this by this date. Because the other stand up I stood at this morning, the Scrum Master wasn't there. Right? And they were, someone else just stood up to the plate and they took over the wall and everyone seemed engaged. So that to me is more than just, doing the actions. That's actually, a genuine concern for the work that they need to do.
Yeah, nothing's more joyful for me when I'm in a team working with them and they don't need me anymore. It's that nanny me fee thing when you don't want me, but you need me, then I'll be there. Yeah. When you want me and you don't need me, then I won't be there. And that's a good thing for us agile coaches. I think is we have to gauge that and say there's a time to let go of the hand. But it's nothing better than being in that situation. I love it when a team gives me that little push to say it is time to go. Renee?
Yeah, I think for myself, agile really does enhance the engagement of individuals, or it really demonstrates failure modes in teams very quickly. So where one or two individuals just aren't going to be right for the team, you can tell that very quickly. And that's where I think it's quite valuable as well.
Yeah, it's a big transition where they become accountable to the team as a whole, not just to the team leader. And that's where I think team leaders have a lot of trouble in those transitions as well, because they've been the figurehead for so long, and suddenly the group makes everybody accountable, even the team leaders. Thoughts?
Agreed.
Craig's not arguing either. I'm on a roll today. So have you got anything more on that soapbox, or can we kick it out from underneath your feet and call it dusted and done?
I think my only addition would be, at what point in time does a project go from being chaos to agile, or vice versa? What at its heart makes agile?
That's a good question. I like that.
I think it's a very fine line, because if you're really truly were running in an agile fashion, it doesn't take much to fall back into chaos. Right? Mm-hmm. So that discipline is very important. Mm-hmm. So it's the agile way of working, that agile process, that pulls you along to go, uh-oh, this feels like chaos. Let's tweak something. We'll fix something to actually pull it back into line.
And that's why that continuous improvement is the very tenuous link there. You need to have that to ensure that doesn't happen to you, or to course correct.
And if you go and look at a lot of the teams that I know we've all worked with, where they feel like they're in chaos, the big excuse you get from all of them is, "Oh, we don't have time to fix the process."
Yep.
And it's that belief that oh no, we have to sit down and have an all hands meeting and figure out the process. Where in actual fact, you're just kidding yourself. Like 10 minutes, sit down, nut it out. What's the problem here? Let's get it sorted in the way you move. And teams that apply that and don't make the time excuse to their way of working and actually see it essential to being successful, I think is the difference. That's how I'd answer your question.
And that's why I really prescribe to that Lisa Atkins, Alistair Coburn, Shuha Re type model, is because how often do you work with teams and you're in the beginning with them and setting them up and the doing, and then you get them into the mode where they're working well, and then you come back later on, yeah? And they've actually changed some of those processes for what they thought was better, and it's broken, and they are in that chaos mode.
Yeah, I definitely think the reflective improvement framework element is one of the key aspects of whether it's chaotic, chaos, or agile. I think the other one is really getting back to the heart of the manifesto. If you're not following the manifesto, then you really can't say that you're doing agile.
Agreed.
Okay, I'll go there. You were waiting for an argument, weren't you?
People can argue about the wording in the manifesto as much as they like, and sure, there's things that aren't quite well defined in there. But I think they did a reasonably good job of coming up with some words that satisfy the problems of the past, but weren't sort of set too much into, being future locked out either. And across 10 years, I continue to look back at that and I go, yeah, I can see what you're trying to say there, despite the fact that the way I look at doing agile projects has changed significantly.
I absolutely agree with you, because the first time I read it, it just lit that flame, and it made me think, and I just sat back and went, wow, that really has the guts of what we're trying to do. It's the first time it's really been put together in the one place at the one time.
Okay, now can we help Renee out the soapbox?
I think it's time to... Oh, there it goes. You all right, Renee? Do you need a hand up?
Yes, please.
I can't tell whether you've actually fallen on the floor or you're standing up, but we'll just go forward.
I'm not touching that with
Tool talk. Oh, it's tool time.
Does everybody know what time it is?
It's tool time!
Yes, I'm Craig the Tool Man Smith.
Well, it could be worse. You could have been Craig the... No, anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so tool of the day is not me, but it's a tool called Linoit. Anyone use Linoit?
No, I haven't.
Yes, I tried to use it on iPad.
Ooh, I haven't tried the iPad version, so I'd be interested to know what you thought of it. But essentially, for those who haven't seen it before, it's an online sticky note tool. It allows you to put sticky notes in an online fashion. And the thing I really like about it is just distributed. So anyone who's online at the time sees sticky notes appear in real time, which makes it really great for things like distributed retrospectives, for distributed planning sessions, or even for just when you want to capture those kind of things, say, on a big screen and in front of a lot of people. I know I saw a talk from Gene Tabaker at Rally Software, where she was showing a slide where they did an open space conference using it as well, which was really good. So it's got a whole bunch of really cool features. Like, you can add sticky notes, you can change the colours, You can drag them around, you have this big canvas. You can invite people in, you can make them public or shared or private, however you want to do. You can change the backgrounds, there's a whole bunch of different backgrounds that you can choose. You can set dates.
Can you put nudie pictures on the background?
If you wish to, yes. But it may.
I'm starting. Starting your worry.
Yeah, it may not meet the values of your organisation in your region.
Give it her last searches, Craig. Anyway, let's continue.
Anywho, you can make it, send emails. You can do all sorts of stuff. And it works in most new web browsers, but also used from the iPhone or the iPad, which is really cool. So how do you find the iPad experience?
So I like to test an application by not having to use the help files or the help links associated with it. I want to try and play around with it and see how far I can get.
So you're one of those ones who gets the IKEA pack, tries to put it together, and then goes and reads the instructions?
Yes.
Or goes
and gets my husband to do it, but...
Which is why she has no furniture in her house.
Can I refer to the previous discussion about chaos and chaotism? But however...
At its essence, I believe assistance should be usable and user-friendly without me having to refer to any help-related files.
Cut to the chase.
I found some of the dragging, moving elements a bit dodgy.
Maybe that's on the iPad, because I think it is.
It's
reasonably easy to use on
normal things desktop. On iPads are quite easy for me, but I think there's some sort of technical glitch where it just doesn't receive the message quite easily, or it's just a bit hard, or I eventually got it consistently, but it every now and then it would just do funny things that really weren't right. I can see definitely the value from what Craig was talking about distributed retrospectives. I think there's nothing more potentially valuable if you work in an organisation that goes across multiple states or multiple countries than to give every single person an iPad and allow them to do retrospectives using Line. I think it'd be a very good idea.
So the question is, Craig, is there a cost?
No, it's totally free. Totally free application to create an account. In fact, I was just looking on the website right now and. Like all these tools, my only concern is I have no idea how they actually, supplant their tool, which always worries me about some of these, these Web 2.0 things. But it's fully free, no cost, and I can't actually see anywhere on here that there's actually a paid-for version of it. And there is another similar tool called List Things, which I've also used before. It's in that same kind of mode. So there's a couple of tools out here in this space, but I found Linewood quite good because of the way you can actually create accounts and invite people in and share them out. And that's probably why I've tended to use this one. And notwithstanding the problems that might occur on the iPad version, certainly if you're just using a laptop, connecting to a LAN, connected that to a projector or to a video conferencing tool, works extremely well.
So on a scale of 1 to 5 star-wise, how many stars are you going to give it?
Look, I'm going to give it probably 4 stars because it is very easy to get up and running with it. You don't have to do lots of banging around to get it working. But in that same space, know its limitations. Right? I don't think it's the kind of tool that you try and draw a story wall in. You certainly could, right? But I think it falls flat on that. It works really well for me for those one-off type sharing and collaborating ideas. Because essentially, I used to use Google Docs beforehand, use a Google spreadsheet. Most of that's quite
it's
nice.
Okay.
It feels a bit clunky, and that's not what a spreadsheet was designed for. This I find really gets people engaged because you've got people on the other end of the other end of a video conference line or on the other end of a screen, and they're seeing their cards come up. You apply actions, whatever, to them in real time. They can see that, and it works really well.
Great. Now I want to make the point that in the ongoing weeks, any tool that we actually review is done free of charge, and there are no kickbacks to the Agile Revolution. However, if you feel that you'd like to give us a kickback or two...
Send us an email.
And if you just want to kick Tony, that's great.
I think for myself, I'd rate it as 3.5 out of 5. I was slightly annoyed by the usability issues. I was slightly annoyed when I eventually did go and find the help functions that the actual screenshots mismatched with what the iPad was. So the functions of the help system in itself didn't actually help me.
Great.
There is an upgradable version on the iPad, so there is a payable version, but I didn't pay for that.
That answers your question.
That might be their paid for.
Okay, so...
Were you using it in Safari directly, were you, or were you using the free app?
I was using the free app.
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't tried it just in Safari either. Whether
no.
As long as it wasn't Internet Exploder, I'm happy. I'll be making sure that I'll go out and have a play with it this week, and I'll give you my thoughts on it next week.
Very good.
How does that sound? Cool. So I guess we should shuffle along. We're running out of time. Practice techniques of the week. Pair programming / pair delivery, people. Here's one. Renee, kick us off. Thoughts?
Okay, so for my element of this, I'd really prefer to talk about pair delivery rather than pair programming. So pair programming is obviously a very well-known agile-based technique whereby two people are sitting together, and I'm sure Craig will go through the ins and outs in a bit more detail.
Doesn't it cost twice as much?
Oh, yeah.
Aren't those two people just talking? Sorry.
At its essence, though, if you look at applying Agile outside of software development, I like to call it pair delivery.
I would argue that's even inside software delivery. Pair programming implies programming. Pair delivery implies any two people on the team working together.
Yeah. What I like about it as a concept is that it's that collaboration element again. It's about getting people together to talk about it. Two heads are always better than one. When we have workshops, it's really like pair delivery, but it's just more than a pair. It's a group of people getting together, sorting out a problem in the best possible way that they can. So whenever you have multiple people working together, there's always an element of value add, especially when we're talking about elements of complexity. So where things are more complex, getting together is significantly more helpful.
Two heads are better than one.
Yep.
And I think the thing that I say to people when I talk to them about pair programming, pair delivery, I don't care what you call it, is that the alternative to that is quite often peer review.
Or nothing.
Or nothing at all, yeah. And my point of difference with peer review is that, you know, I'm working on this piece of work and I throw it over to Craig and say, Craig, you give it a look at it. Now, how much has he invested? You know, Craig looks at it and goes, well, I'll look at it to the best of my, really, it's Tony's ass.
But not only that, Tony, by the time that you've done that, you've actually fully done it.
Correct.
So if there were severe issues with it or ideological differences with the approach that was taken or with the architecture that was chosen, you've lost that and you've just wasted a whole pile of time.
Yeah, and I think the only thing I have an issue with, two things. Firstly, the reason I like pair programming or pair delivery is for the reasons that you've lined out, particularly about that review. And one of the things I've noticed in a lot of Agile teams is that, you know, we've dropped the traditional methods where we said, oh, these big long review sessions where we sit in a room and we talk about stuff, you know, for hours on end. We're throwing that away because, yes, it was wastage, but we haven't really, you know, replaced it to, you know, with anything major. So that is where this comes in. The problem I've got, though, is that a lot of people don't want to invest in that pair delivery as pair program was originally intended, which is basically any production code, you know, two people must be sitting at a computer. If one of those pairs walks away, essentially, you know, delivery stops. What happens in reality, especially with pair delivery, is we say to people, look, if you've got a problem, drag someone up to your chair and work the problem out, then go back to the work that you're doing. But it falls then into the same line you were talking about, Renee, is that, you know, perhaps, you know, that you don't get that full investment and you still find out too late because you come along 2 days later and go, hey, hang on, this is never going to work. And then you've got to go back and, you know, look at 2 days worth of work. So there is that line, I think, is what, how much, you know, should it be in the original intent of pair programming? Go back and read, you know, Kent Beck in the XP book, is that, you know, it's done for the, you know, majority of, you know, or at least all production code.
I don't disagree with you. You and I are like-minded on that one. We've spoken about it quite often. So anything else you want to throw into the mix about pair programming, pair delivery? Because I'm going to bring us to a close. We do have a section here for Mailbag Problem Fest. So what we'd like for anyone who's listening to this in the future, we'd like you to send us any of your questions, Problem Fest comments about what we've said to the
podcast at
theagilerevolution.com. There we go. It's new and it's improved and we'll get used to it as we go. So for all things Agile, join us on the Agile Revolution regularly. I'm Tony.
I'm Renee.
I'm Craig.
Viva la revolution. Join us, brothers.